And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. One day in Chapel Hill, 8-year-old Becca Burke was struck by lightning, and things were never the same for her. And sometimes lightning does strike twice, or maybe even more often. At least it does in Michelle Youngstone's new novel, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. So she's visiting in Chapel Hill, and this novel is set in Chapel Hill. How'd you get the idea to have a little girl struck by lightning in Chapel Hill, or is this a true story?
It's not a true story. It's a work of fiction. But when I set out to start writing this book, I knew I wanted it to be about a girl's relationship with her dad. And from there, I talked with my professor. I got my master's of fine arts and creative writing at VCU in Richmond, Virginia. And he said, do you know how many books are written about girls' dysfunctional relationships with their dad? Like, what can set your book apart? So I actually was struck by lightning myself when I was 11. And even though I didn't know a lot about it then, that kind of spurred me to start doing research. And I actually did not come from an academic community, but I thought that I'd like to set this novel in a college town. And I had a friend as an undergraduate at VCU who actually grew up in Chapel Hill. And she would always tell me stories about growing up here. And her dad actually was a professor at UNC Chapel Hill, and as was her mother. And then I dated someone at VCU who was from Chapel Hill. And it just seemed like such an interesting small town that from there I got really excited and started doing research.
This is great, and I want to come back to the Chapel Hill connections because we love to hear people from out of town tell us about where we live, and your book is just full of these great scenes about Chapel Hill. It's not all in Chapel Hill though. So you're out on your book tour now, and you probably got a little short statement about what the book is about, and what are the things that you found that people get interested in? Tell us what the book is about.
I wish I had a succinct statement. You know, I should by now have one of those, but it's such a complex book, and because there are so many characters, for me, the book is really about redemption, which sounds a little cliche, but ultimately, for me, it's about how people are connected in unexpected ways. And basically, there are two main characters who are both deeply affected by lightning, and this brings them together in an unexpected way. And I think also when you're investigating lightning, you realize that that's something that you can't control. And there are so many things in our lives that we can't control. But I think this book investigates how we react to those things that we have no control
over.
The surprises or the tragedies or those types of things.
You mentioned that there are two important characters. One is this little girl whom I mentioned earlier, who lives in Chapel Hill, 8 years old, gets struck by lightning. So I'm going to follow her. Now, who's the other?
Well, that's Becca Burke, and the other one is Buckley Pietank. And he grows up in Mont Blanc, Arkansas, which is a fictitious town in Arkansas. And he grows up under very different circumstances. He grows up in true poverty, not knowing who his father is. And he's a very different character from Becca. I don't want to say too much, but a lot of people are like...
Let me tell you, I'm going to argue with you just a little bit.
Sure.
Because I've just read this book. And I don't think by giving away anything about these characters is going to take away the joy of reading the book, because there's so much richness to it, and that I've read it, and then I've now started reading it again, and I'm surprised all the way. Tell us a little more than you ordinarily do, or you will about this guy. I think it'll help. Tell us some more about him.
Well, Buckley is a kid who's always being bullied and, as the narrator tells us, beaten into the red clay roads of Arkansas. He desperately wants to know who his dad is. For me, he's a very empathetic character. Like, interestingly enough, in the first draft of the novel, he did not show up as a writer until I was on page 70. And then he showed up, and his mother, who is very obese, and his grandmother, whose name happens to be Winter Pie Tank, and they all just showed up one day out of the blue. And I thought, what are you guys, like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. But Buckley really, really wanted to be there, and there was so much to his character.
Well, let me, all right, I'm just so you won't hedge too much about this, but one of the interesting pieces of your book, it sounds like it's titled like a nonfiction handbook for lightning strike survivors. And there is interspersed in this book excerpts from a imaginary real book that is written by Buckley. So, I mean, he's the writer, and how does he, tell us about him writing this book. From the way you describe it, he's the last thing in the world you'd think about a guy who would be writing a book about lightning or any kind of book.
Yeah, well, because of the tragedy that he suffers, he's trying to help other people who are affected by
lightning. What are you
talking
about, a tragedy that he suffers?
Oh, can I tell?
Yeah, of course you okay. can. I mean, yeah. No.
Well, sometimes my editor is like,
well, they're not
don't
listening.
Get, yeah,
they're
don't
not
give
listening.
It away, and they're not here. Yeah, Buckley's mother is struck dead and killed by lightning, and this really changes him, because when it happens to him, it's the point in his life where he has finally found happiness and starts to think of himself as a kid and an independent and doesn't feel... I think one of the things the narrator says is, like, it's the world does with him what it will from the beginning of the book on. And it's the first time in the book where he's moved from Arkansas to Galveston, Texas, that he actually feels like he knows what he's doing. He has friends for the first time in his life. I think there's even a line in the book that says the biggest thing he had to worry about was his fear that a friend of his dad was going to take him to, like, a brothel kind of place. And that was the that was the biggest thing that he had to worry about.
No, but he is happy. I love this, because here's a guy who was so unhappy in his situation in Arkansas. He gets to Galveston. He's got these great people who are looking after him. His mama, who was obese but has lost weight, is now attracting men. And, I mean, it's all – and the man that she's attracted is somebody whom he loves. He's, as you said, and he's got a girlfriend, and he's got –
Flamehead, yeah.
Yeah, Flamehead. I mean, you know, just, I mean, it took me back to my teenage years and just, so, I mean, all of this, and then his mama gets killed by lightning. And so you've got these two, this is what you've got these two people. One, the little girl who's hit by lightning, and she's got a whole another pathway. And then you've got this guy who is a wonderful, empathetic guy who would never write a book, but when he loses his mama, he's got to do something like a lot of us do when we lose a child or lose or sick. We want to write to help other people who are going through the same kind of thing.
And both Becca and Buckley, I feel like this book is so much about art, because she's a painter and he's a writer. And I feel like they're both trying through their own mediums to figure out how they can come to grips, come to terms with their childhoods and how they can, like, then move forward. And for Buckley, it's not his fault that nobody can control that his mother was struck by lightning, but through writing the handbook for lightning strike survivors, he's sort of trying to work out in his head, why did this happen to her? And why didn't this happen to me? And is there any way I can help other people who, you know, suffer in this way? Or is there any way we can save a life? And in Buckley's case, there really wasn't any way. You know, he comes to realize there wasn't anything that he could have done to save his mother. It just wasn't meant to be.
Well, let's take a quick break. And
okay.
We talked about some of the fictional aspects of it. We're moving towards some nonfiction. And one of the things that happened to me when I read your book, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors, I wondered how much of the advice in the lore is for real and how much of it's fiction. I want to find out some more about how dangerous lightning is and whether it's likely to happen to me. And we're going to talk some more with Michelle Youngstone about her book, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors, after this short break.
Yeah.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Michelle Youngstone. She's the author of The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. This is a work of fiction, which, by the way, is set largely in Chapel Hill, in our hometown, and other parts at the Outer Banks. And then a few scenes in places that you never heard of, like New York City and Galveston. But we talked some about the story and the characters, and we're going to talk some more about them, if you will, later on.
Sure.
But one of the things that grabs you about this book is the nonfiction. You've got a mythical, you've got an imaginary book sort of shuffled in after every chapter, an excerpt from a Lightning Book Survivor, a real Lightning Book Survivor manual. It scared me to death. And so let me ask you this. Is your, in your novel, people are getting hit not just once or twice, sometimes three times, but lightning is just following these people around. And so I said, does Michelle, and Michelle has been hit by lightning herself. But one of your lightning strike survivors has an aura when they take a picture. She's, you know, she's not just right afterwards, but for a long time afterwards.
Yeah.
She ruins a picture. Now, is this science fiction or is some of this real?
Most of this is real. The auras and the photographs, it's not real, but you know, back before digital cameras, that kind of thing happened all the time. So that did happen to me, which is where I got
the idea.
Right?
You had a picture with an aura.
Yeah, a few of them, yeah.
Now,
I think it's just poor photography or water or bad development, but, you know, who knows? So okay. I think in the novel, it plays around with that. You know, what is it that's real and what isn't, and how much of it is in the eye of the beholder. I actually, in the novel, Becca can't wear a watch because she always loses time. And then she feels like she can actually propel the hands of the clock backwards and shows this to her grandmother in the book. I really, like the fictitious character Becca, had a drawer full of watches that did not work. And my parents would buy me watch after watch after watch and always, you know, replace the batteries. But every day, it'd be 3 or 4 minutes behind.
So this is based on your experience. You won't say, you can't prove that it was the lightning, but it could be.
Yeah, and I've actually talked to other lightning strike survivors who've had similar experiences. Because I think it affects a person's electromagnetic field.
Permanently.
Well, for me, I started being able to keep time, as I call it, again, when I was in my late 20s, which was so disappointing for me because I thought it was kind of cool.
Your...
yeah,
you lost the edge.
I lost that electrical.
And what else? What are the other question that comes up, and you deal with this pretty forthrightly in the book, and I think destroy that the myth, but it is that we think if you get hit by lightning, you're dead.
Yeah, and usually a person's heart has stopped from that electrical charge, just like when you see people rubbing the electrical paddles together, like in an emergency room show, to start somebody's heart back up. And as the book stresses, you should begin CPR immediately because a lot of times people will come right back. That's another reason that so many people are struck by lightning and survive. The lightning might stop their heart, but then it'll start up on its own. But it is important, like, people used to think that if you were struck by lightning, you still carried that charge. But lightning, everything happens so quickly that there's no way, no one carries a charge with them.
An aura maybe, but not a charge or a little disruption.
They're not going to electrocute you if you touch them.
Yeah, but that's it. So this advice that's part of your, part of the, what I think is non-fictional, part of your book of fiction, is that what was the rule, Michelle, if most people, I think the rules were something like, most people survive, so attend to the apparently dead first.
Treat the apparently
dead first.
It's just
breaking the first rule of ordinary triage.
Right.
You go after the
people.
Apparently dead people, and you try to revive them because it might be that their heart has just stopped.
Their heart has just stopped, and you can start their heart again. And actually, almost, basically, I think everything in the actual handbook part is true. I did a lot of research. Specifically, NASA had, for a long time, NASA had the most information about lightning, because it is sort of a mystery still. Why are some people, there's no scientific explanation why some people are struck 16, 17 times, whereas most people in their lifetime are never struck.
And 16 or 17 times?
Yeah, I mean, I've even read some cases where people in North Carolina have been struck that many. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at my research.
I'm just thinking that you stretched me with three times.
Three, yeah. Yeah, some people have been struck, you know, 16, 17 times. I mean, it's amazing. And
how about you? You've been struck once.
Just once.
But do you go around and, I mean, now you've done all this research and 16 or 17 times, and some and most people never. Not, that's statistically not right, unless there's something about you all who are struck by lightning.
And I think there is. And scientists have no evidence
about it. What could it be? What could it be?
I don't know. Like, if it's some kind of electrical charge where, you know, the scientifically they say lightning always follows the path of least resistance. It's like a battery, a positive and a negative charge making a connection. So maybe there are some people who have more of this negative charge to them. And I think maybe once you're struck, it changes.
So that maybe you're, it's kind of like some of these diseases that you're more susceptible once it's happened first.
I think so. And that's just my.
Now, you're not pulling. I mean, you're not pulling my leg now because I'm not.
But I'll.
Because I'm believing you.
For example, the day after my book sold, which was so entirely miraculous, it sold. We were on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I wrote a lot of the book there. And then my book sold, I found out from my agent, on November 14th, 2008. It's November, mid-November in Hatteras. I'm walking down the beach, and I'm just la, 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 la. And my four-year-old at the time, son, and my husband, I see them in the distance coming toward me. And all of a sudden, all the hair on my arms stood up, and I could see that the sky was really white. They didn't look like thunder boomer kinds of clouds, but I got this kind of creeping sensation, chill, and then I got goosebumps. The hair on my arms stood up, and I knew that lightning was about to strike.
Gosh.
And I thought, well, this just figures. I just sold my book, so I'm going to be struck dead. Later, my agent told me, she said, well, you know, Random House doesn't publish people posthumously, not first-time authors. Which is really funny. So
maybe the lightning says, we got to save her for later. We got to get this book out. Then we can get her.
Yeah.
We can get her later.
Well, just yesterday it was stormy and scares me. The more research I did, the more scared
I
became.
Well, the more you read this, I just warn anybody who's thinking about buying and reading this book. It's a great book, but you will be a little bit scared of lightning more than you were before. And along those lines, help us with the practical. We're going to get back to the story in a minute and the great characters that you've created. But with practical advice. The non-fictional part of your book gives advice. You're less likely to get hit if you don't play golf.
Or live in Florida.
Or live in Florida. So there's some reasonable things that you can do. But if you are out on a golf course and the lightning starts striking, should you get by? And you got a choice. You can stay out on. There's no shelter. You can stay out in the middle of the fairway, you can go get beside a tree, or you can go in a general woody area, or what? Are you get in the lowest area that you can find? What should you do?
You really do want to get in the lowest area that you can find, and you want to. You don't want to stand under a tree, because if lightning strikes the tree, it's going to travel most likely through the ground and then up through you, because you're like a parallel thing. You're like a parallel entity. So the best thing to do at that time would be to crouch. Latest science tells us crouch low to the ground. You know, your feet obviously are going to be touching the ground, but try not to have any other part of your body touch the ground, and kind of crouch over. So the less of you that's touching the ground, the better, and the lower to the ground
Why is the less you're touching the ground better?
Because you're less. There's going to be less entryways for the electricity to come up into you.
So if the electricity wouldn't hit you directly, but come up through the ground to get, or that's coming up through the ground to meet the lightning, is
right.
That?
Right, yeah. And, like, it's usually the return charge on a lightning strike that kills somebody.
What does that mean? What does the return charge mean?
So the lightning comes down from the heavens or the cloud, and then it has to return back to the cloud, and so the charge coming back up from the ground after it's made that connection. I can't tell you the wattages, but it's much, that's usually what kills people. So, like, in my circumstance, I was struck in my parents' driveway, and it wasn't raining or anything. And my mom and I have always wondered why I didn't have to go to the hospital, why I didn't die. It was a very surreal, weird thing. And all we can figure is I was standing in the driveway holding onto my dad's truck. And we think that when I got struck, that the return charge then left through my dad's truck, because it's not like the rubber tires on a vehicle that save you. That has no bearing whatsoever, a lot of people think.
Well.
When you're in a vehicle, what actually saves you is the metal casing, because it can take the brunt of that electrical force, and like kind of it'll spin around a couple of times before there's nothing for anything to catch fire, so it'll hold that charge and then return up to the cloud, as opposed to we have, like, you know, circulatory systems that are going to be affected by the lightning, which same token, people, the only time people are burned by lightning is when there's water present. So,
two things, I guess. One is that I'm just about as likely to be hit by the lightning. It misses me. When that bolt comes down, it misses me. But then it's got to go, as you say, that charge has got to get back up to the clouds. If I get in the way of it going up, it could strike me from beneath.
It could, yeah, but it takes the path of least resistance, so I don't think anybody could move fast enough to get in the way.
Oh, to move out of the way.
In the way.
So it goes up the path, more likely the path that it came down.
It likes to go, yeah, it likes to. So the fact that it came down and hit me but then didn't go return that way is unusual, but again, that's why science, I mean, lightning is still baffling to a large degree to scientists. And as mentioned in my book, the support group for lightning strike survivors is the same support group that electroshock therapy or electroshock treatment victims have, because the side effects are the same for people who have been struck by lightning and people who have had electroshock therapy.
Loss of memory. What other kinds of things?
Loss of memory, insomnia, anxiety, heart palpitations.
Just disrupts your body's electrical system in every in every respect.
And actually, my first reading that I did after the book came out, I had like three lightning strike survivors come, which was really, I thought that was so interesting. And they were asking me all these technical questions that they already knew the answers to.
They were checking you out.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. I don't know the answers to the questions I'm asked. But we are talking about a book that's called The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. And maybe it is that kind of handbook. But what it really is at its core is a work of fiction about people who've been affected by a lightning strike. And we're going to continue our discussion with the book's author, Michelle Youngstone, after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Michelle Youngstone.
Yep. Hi.
She's the author of The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. It's her first novel. And there are all sorts of stories. She's reluctant to tell me any of them, but there are hundreds of them. So I'm telling her she can talk about one or two of them and not worry about giving away the book, because it's rich with lots of stories. One of the things that fascinated me, Michelle, about your lightning strike survivor, Becca, is the intersection between art and writing. And you describe her talent as an artist and her and the challenges that an artist faces. Becca, though she grew up in Chapel Hill, winds up in New York trying to make going to school and trying to make a living as an artist, a tough thing. And it comes across pretty genuine. Now, certain parts of this book got to be autobiographical. Are you an artist too?
I do. I paint some, and I do some collage work, but I don't do any oil painting. So Becca's an oil painter. So for that part, what I did is I went and met with a friend of mine who I actually mentioned in the novel, fictitiously only, though. is one of my artists in the book, but he's a Richmond artist, Tommy Van Auken, and he's an incredible oil painter. So I went and spent...
We're going to take an extra short break. Michelle Youngstone and I will be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. Guess what? Michelle is still here. Michelle Youngstone is the author of The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. It's a very rich, I don't want to say complicated book, but there's a lot to it. And we're only going to be able to talk about some of it. Your main character, Becca, Chapel Hill girl who grew up and moved to New York to study art, is an artist. And before our little emergency break, you were telling me a little bit about your experience in trying to step into her shoes so that, to the extent you are not her, and that you can understand what her challenges as an artist might be.
Well, since I'm not an oil painter, I did research oil painting. I had done it before, but I wasn't that familiar with it, oil painting and oil paints. And then I have so much passion as a writer, and that in and of itself is an art form, that what I did is I took the technical information that I had researched and really combined it. As I write about Becca's painting and how she's feeling, I combined it with how I feel as a writer when I'm really in the zone and the words are coming and the characters are speaking to me, and I feel really, it's almost like, you know, it's like an out-of-body experience, basically, well, like you're in another world.
Yeah, one of the things that opened the door for me is you described Becca's experience as an artist. I don't want to say she's a troubled young woman, but she had challenges, and and also ambitious as an artist as well. But she would kind of get into a manic state about, and just would just go on and on and on, no sleep, no nothing. I mean, you know, just paint, and then whammo.
Collapse,
yeah. And is that the way you write?
Pretty much, yes. I'm very prolific. I write a lot. My agent, my book agent says, you take a break from writing by writing. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, that's very much like me. And I think for a lot of people, you know, who just need to paint or need to draw or need to sculpt or need to write or need to make music or whatever their art form is, I think a lot of artists are that way. I've never been one, knock on wood, to have writer's block.
Never writer's block.
No,
oh, come on. Maybe that comes with being struck by lightning like you were. Yeah.
I think that's where I get the anxiety from. That's one of the side effects.
Talking about that, let's move. I'm interested in that because... As we've talked about, your novel, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors, must not have been an easy book to write because there's so many pieces of the puzzle that kind of have to fit together. And were you able to, maybe I should ask you this, if the writing was so easy, was putting the pieces of the puzzle a little bit more of a challenge?
Yeah, putting the pieces of the puzzle together were a little more difficult. I think it Like, this was a big, ambitious undertaking. Even from the very beginning, my writing professor that I was first working with said, why don't you try to write something that's actually linear and with fewer characters, because this is a little bit crazy. And then later, after the book had sold, the proofreader said, you know, I sort of hate this book. Not really like he doesn't hate the book, but he's like, I'm getting sick of writing down all the names of all these characters. So he was having trouble keeping, I assume it was a he, I don't know, but he loved the book, but he said having to keep track of all these characters is kind of crazy.
Yeah, you can see my list. I mean, that's only a partial list of the main characters.
But, you know, it was fun, and thematically for me, the book is so much about salvation and how do we save ourselves and each other, and whether it's art or what is it that is at our core that makes us...
Salvation, saving ourselves from what? What are your cares?
Oh, I think from, like, when bad things happen in our lives, things we don't have any control over, finding that peace, finding our families, finding love within ourselves, and coming to a place where... I guess ultimately we can love ourselves, and bad things happen to good people. And my book, it really explores that. And then how do we come to a place where we can get through the day and still be happy? And then, like, one thing is when talking about art, that proves to be a point of salvation for the character Becca, that helps her to come to understand who she is. And then I felt like one of the things the book touches on is at the end of the novel, the concentration camp Theresienstadt that was filled with all of these artists, mostly children, and how a man risked his life and hid all the artwork that was made at the concentration camp, and it wasn't found until a decade later. But that artwork, for me, I know when I first saw it, it's such, you know, the pictures are so beautiful and cheery, and, you know, it shows, like, how you have to, people need to have hope, and in whatever form that you create it. I just think it's really important, and that's something in the novel I really try to explore, is this notion that there can be redemption, there can be salvation.
So that, as bad as your life might seem now, there's light, not necessarily lightning, but light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, hang on and look for ways to get through it, because
I want to bring up another character.
Sure.
Who's a Chapel Hill character, and this is Becca's father, Rowan, who mm-hmm. is a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, a bright chemist, but one who is stuck in the mud as far as his profession is concerned, and also not altogether the best father or husband. Tell us about Rowan, and then when you finish, I'm going to ask you about how redemption or salvation came to him, if it did, in your book. Tell us about this jerk.
Yeah, well, Rowan is a philanderer, and he very quickly bores with his wife and says, you know, his mother was right. He shouldn't have married someone from Podunk. And he has multiple affairs, including with his students. And he collects things of value, including British sports cars. And he wants to own a yacht, and he wants to be wealthy, and he feels like he's not getting his fair due. And he's very narcissistic, and that's an understatement. So even when Becca tells him she was struck by lightning, he says, basically, you know, go play in the traffic. I don't believe you. That, you know, who hit you first? Somebody must have hit you. And he doesn't pay any attention to the needs of his wife or to the needs of his daughter.
Again, this is Chapel Hill professor. You shine the light on us.
He's a fictional character, as a reminder. But he does have this really strong sense of his family had once been very wealthy, and they've lost their money, and he hasn't gotten tenure, and he feels like the world owes him, as opposed to looking at those around him and how they're affected.
He's obviously, this is, I won't say it, but as someone who doesn't automatically draw attention to females, he had some kind of chemistry, because women were all over him, weren't they? I mean, it wasn't just him being a lecher or being a philanderer. Women were, there was something
they
about
were,
him that
yeah.
What was it? What did you give him? What
well,
gift did you give him?
I think that sometimes women or people in general are attracted to arrogant people because they seem so self-confident and self-assured. And I think that was what was attractive in Rowan. He was intelligent. He did, on the surface, come across as being very confident. And I think that you know, his confidence, which is really, in his case, narcissism, sometimes draws people in. He could be very charming. He could be funny. I think it's referenced that he looks, Becca thinks, like Cary Grant. I think Mary Wickelburk, when she first meets him, thinks he looks like Clark Gable. So he's a handsome man. And again, I think that his arrogance is mistaken for confidence.
Well, there you share with us a couple of his multiple affairs, one of which starts sort of in the Carolina Inn, a great sex scene in the Carolina Inn that you have, and then which leads to the breakup of his marriage, and he marries the woman with whom he has this affair, and then he's just can't hold it back. So he has an affair with another very attractive woman who's taken, so taken with him that she calls, and the second marriage breaks up. I mean, so he, all of this is kind of tragic. And then his in your book, he and his daughter have a falling out. So he's he's kind of in trouble. And where do you, towards what do you work with him towards some kind of redemption? Or you just say, he's an exception. He's never going to be.
No, he's not an exception. I think that what happened with him was when he meets the second woman in his life, who's called Patricia Heathrow, but she's called Patty Cake. He meets his match because she's someone who's very confident and who really goes after what she wants, knows what she wants, and isn't going to put up with anything less. And so here's a woman who has this confidence that Rowan, the male character, thinks that he has, and hers isn't sheer arrogance. She backs it up. So I think in a way, when he finally meets a woman with whom you think he won't cheat, and he does cheat, for me, like, he's just brought to his knees. Everything all at once comes tumbling down. And in order for him to actually have any sense of redemption, this is something that has to happen to him. Is he has to be
Knocked down.
Yeah,
and,
he has
hard.
To be knocked down hard, and he has to be put in his place because somebody recently.
But you don't
asked
have
me,
lightning. You don't have lightning hit him.
No, these women get him instead. but one of the things that even the character Becca's mother says to him is, or says to Becca near the end of the book, is, you know, it's not too late. She didn't give her dad another chance. And as I mentioned when we first started talking, this really is to some degree, or I think to a large degree, about a child's relationship with a father, whether it's Buckley and the father he doesn't have or Becca and the father that she so desperately wants in her life, but eventually just says, I can't do it. And can she do it? Or, you know, is she going to give him another chance? And does he deserve it? For me, I do see redeeming qualities in him, particularly at the end of the novel. I think he's trying. I think he's genuine. But I think, too, a reader could go either way and seeing if he really is. I mean, I honestly, by the end of the book, I wrote the book, and I feel sorry for him. So,
yeah, well, we all feel sorry for him a little bit. And part of it is that notwithstanding all the economic success and things that come to us, if we're disengaged or out of sync with the closest members of our family, it works out to be a tragedy. From that, is there redemption? And I think you argue that there is. I mean, let him be a good photographer and share in the art success, the limited art success of his daughter, and maybe those things brought about a little bit of redemption. Now, you set your book in Chapel Hill and another part of North Carolina, as you mentioned, and apparently a part that you love, the Outer Banks.
Yep.
And but you're all over the Outer Banks. You're in Manio, you're in Hatteras, you're in Nag's Head. Where?
Wanchee's.
Yeah, of course. And of course, Wanchee's. Yeah, Wanchee's is sort of the center of all this. Why those places, and what's your favorite place?
Well, I love all of the Outer Banks. My favorite current place is Hatteras, and the further south, the better, away from all of the crowds. I like a big, wide beach. But, you know, I started going to Hatteras when I was, I guess my first vacation ever was 7, and we would go every year. And since then, I've written a lot of, gosh, I probably wrote half of the first draft of this book.
So it's a good place to write for you.
It's a great place to write. And I've been there through so many thunderstorms with the doors flying open. And I've gotten, gosh, I was at a beach house there when I found out that I got into the MFA Creative Writing Program. I was on the beach there when I found out that I got like a student assistantship because I wasn't going to be able to afford to go. And I was there when I found out that my book had sold. I got married on the beach. I always forget to put that one first. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry if he's listening.
My husband.
Well, last can also be the place of honor, and I won't make you list anymore because that was the crescendo. And the other thing I want to stop with that is you obviously are familiar with Chapel Hill and like it, and then you're back in Chapel Hill. What are some of the places that you want your husband and your child to see while you're here?
I would like them to see the old well, the gardens, McCorkle Place, the Gimgul Castle, which is what first intrigued me about Chapel Hill. I thought it was amazing. Well, for me, like, I don't think my five-year-old will be interested in it, but the archives of all the writers who have gone to school here. Sutton's Drugstore, there were two scenes in the novel that got cut that actually took place at Sutton's.
But there is a Sutton's.
It's mentioned when she says we always go there on Sunday, but I had written two chapters in Sutton's Drugstore, or two scenes, and they both got cut. But so definitely there, and just Franklin Street, and just walk around, see the dorms, and it's such a beautiful landscape and a beautiful university.
Well, thanks for visiting us and sharing with us your view of Chapel Hill, both here and then also in your new novel, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors, brand new book by Michelle Youngstone, our guest today on Who's Talking.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you, Michelle, and thanks to all y'all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, and it's been Who's Talking.